What's so great about? What's so great about? Who?
And welcome to What's So Great About, the podcast that is not afraid to get their hands dirty and really ask what's so great about a particular topic. I fucking forgot to do the question again.
That's fine. The comedy is in the fact that you speed up and slow down and change your volume so much in the
Excuse me for trying to add a bit of theatrics.
Okay. No, the editor's nightmare.
My name's Terry.
My name's Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very well, and you?
I too am well.
Good to hear it.
Andy, we have a guest with us again this week. We are cranking out the guests this season. We have stand-up comedian, a member of the Dreamgun Film Reads troupe, and possibly the busiest and hardest working guy in all the Dublin comedy scene. Mm-hmm. It's Ed Salmon.
Almost. Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. I'm so busy and hard working. It's just difficult.
It's just, I see it. I see it everywhere. A different gig every other night, man. You are killing it.
Fair play.
I've got to finish this pullback reveal before I head out. that's what delayed me. Just trying to nail that punchline. Yeah. Hey guys, nice to meet you in person.
Finally.
It's always nicer to do these things in person.
Absolutely. Yeah, we find now we're like the studio. I find just gives us a bit of a different energy. Yeah. We're a bit more.
Yeah.
Up. Maybe it's the kind of monster, but it's. I find my energy is like I've done cocaine or something.
With Martin Short, and that is a vague and oblique reference to the fact that we are covering the 7th film in our Paul Thomas Anderson miniseries, Inherent Vice. Fucking got there.
Brilliant.
Nice. Yes.
Two to go.
Beautifully done.
Now, do you want any preamble before we go into the movie?
Let's go around the horn and see how everybody
is
doing.
Great, I've got something for you.
Hit me.
Now, I've been a bit of a phone addict in the last couple of years, so like literally, and it's gotten to the stage it's so bad that like if I'm walking like to work or to my car, I'm like walking with my phone, right? Mm-hmm. So I got this app.
Okay.
you know what I need.
Slow down.
App. I got an app or application if you prefer. Okay. And it's called Minimalist App.
Okay.
All right. And it's just this black screen, as you can see, right? Takes away all the color, right? Mm-hmm. And if I want to go into an app, then it basically makes it a little bit difficult so that, you know, it just gives me a list, like a black and white list of my apps.
Yes. Oh.
And then it notices which ones I go on the most. So when I click on, say, Instagram, it'll say, do you want to go on for 1 minute or 5 minutes or whatever?
Oh.
And then afterwards it tells you, your time is up. Do you want to keep going?
Your time is up. My time is now.
Just keep going, keep going. But I have found, since all the color and all the fancy lights and all this has been taken away, I have picked up my phone as I normally would several times this week, and I've just been like,
How interesting. I could probably do with getting something like
now,
that.
It's a shame that it has to be so like idiot-proof for me to not do it, but otherwise I will just pick up and mindlessly scroll on it.
Yeah, because it is a I find WhatsApp groups to be more distracting.
Oh, yeah.
Than, because I don't really go on social media. I'm in and out like a ninja.
Yeah.
I just like
post that back away.
But occasionally, you know, and there's certain WhatsApp groups that I'm in where people are on Twitter all the time. I have to read so much shit just to get to a they'll send a couple of good links, good funny tweets or threads.
Yeah.
And it's like, thanks for that, because I would never spend the amount of time on Twitter to curate all that sort of stuff.
I find like Twitter is my thing. Like, Faye's like, what are you looking for on Twitter? I'm like, I don't know. I'm looking for like news or something, but I mean, like, I have like a couple of football guys I follow on it. I'm like, oh, it's the latest transfer news. And then I'm like, I'm spending my whole day waiting on Fabrizio Romano to say, here we go, Man United. I'm like, there's got to be a better way.
But you know what I find as well now with this as well is that when I do go on then, and I'm kind of like, I haven't been on it for ages, and then I'm like, I'll just scroll a little bit and see.
That's too much.
And then I just put it, and then so then I kind of find like, oh, there's nothing interesting the last time, and then it gets a bit easier the next time to not look.
I have made the conscious
It's terrible, but that's the way it has to be.
I've made the conscious effort when I get home from work I'm like, put the phone in a drawer because I'm on an hour commute home.
Yeah.
So I'm on my phone watching something or whatever, and then I'm like, put the phone in the drawer and don't look at it until, you know, after the kids are in bed or whatever like that. Like,
that's because, a good policy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
do you follow it?
Yeah, I do sometimes. Then like,
I bake mine into a pie. And I have to wait for the pie to cool in order to reach inside. Because if I reach inside too soon, I will burn my hands.
Oh my lord!
And I've had numerous skin grafts because I haven't been able to resist.
One hand is a lighter shade than the other.
Yeah, listen.
That's ingenious. Yeah, that's what I must do.
I think you gotta. Because we all lack self-control, it seems.
Honestly, like,
ridiculous.
I've tried to just do it myself, but I just find I had these, like, I don't know, just like if I'm in, like, say for example, if I'm chatting away and in the house and Kerry's like, oh, I'll just be back in a sec. As soon as she leaves the room, I don't even notice that my phone's just in my hand.
Hey.
Like,
oh. Yeah.
You know, so all these, but I found it to be very helpful. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. And what's that called again?
Minimalist app, and I don't get any money for it. But I think it's pay for it though. So it's like,
Are you paying for it?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm still on my free trial.
All right.
But it's it's like 20 quid a year or something like that. I know.
That kind of have to. 20 quid.
That's the sort of thing you could buy a Blu-ray copy of Inherent Vice and get a pint afterwards.
Yay! Hey. All right.
Huh?
Yeah.
Very good. Huh?
Because I went to try and buy a Blu-ray copy of this. Because, see, here's the thing. I'm trying to get Vodafone, if you're listening, fuck you, Vodafone. I wanted to get paper copies of bills.
Mm.
For reasons that I'd like to keep to myself, but it's so hard to do it online. Nothing exists in the real world. And then I had this thought of, because I went to look up Inherent Vice to see if it
not
was
streaming.
It's not streaming on any of the streaming platforms, either the ones I pay for or piggyback on my brother-in-law. And then I was like, okay, well maybe I'll buy it. And then I went in town. I was like, where do you get?
How do you get a physical copy?
Amazon.
But I don't want to give Bezos my money.
Yeah.
So
where is there, apart from Amazon, that you would buy a Blu-ray?
Golden Discs.
Golden Discs or Tower. Tower has the best selection. Golden Discs just has, you know,
2 for 30.
Yeah.
Random ones.
And it's just your kind of basic. There's no
Sopranos box set. Or very popular.
Tower is really expensive though. Like I'm not trying to put them on 14, blast.
14 euro it was for the Blu-ray. And I remember going, all right, I'll get that because I hadn't checked if it was on streaming and I was in a rush and said, oh, well, I'll check if it's on streaming. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
And I'll get it tomorrow. And I went back and it was gone. Someone had bought the only copy.
No, I bought mine on Amazon.
Because I'm kind of thinking, because I do have Blu-rays of
plural
of movies. Blu-rays. Oh, more than one.
I like the way the ray was emphasized as well. Blu-rays, not to be confused.
That's how I said it as a joke one time and I can't stop saying it that way. Blu-ray. And I was like, yeah, I want to get the movies that I really like, that I do rewatch. You know, your Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Your Spirited Aways.
Oh,
nice. You know these kind of movies that are
classics.
Endlessly rewatchable classics. Because who knows if, like,
it's going away
with all these mergers and stuff and content being,
it's all gonna go away.
It's all gonna go away, and we're gonna have another It's a Wonderful Life situation where we won't see movies for 20 years.
I do remember thinking that when iTunes first came out, and I remember thinking at the time, I don't know at what stage I changed my tune, but just like, I don't feel like I own it if I'm just have a stream or a digital copy. Yeah, I like to have, like, this is like whatever, like the world can go to shit, but I'll still have my copy of 40-year-old Virgin on DVD
that I bought for 6 quid in a centre somewhere.
Actually, I was refused. Do you remember that? I was like 25 and I went to buy a 40-year-old Virgin on, it was like 4 quid. It was like just one of the, you know, because it had been out ages. And the person wouldn't sell it to me. She said, do you have ID? I was like, what?
Flattered, first of all.
Like, well, thank you. But, but like, you know, like a movie that I'd say, I was like, I've seen this movie 10 times.
You seen this movie? Also, I'll tell you some jokes from it.
I think it was because I had a backpack and I might have had real schoolboy energy. Yeah.
Sort you were like short shorts.
And I was wearing one of those hats with a propeller on the top.
Socks that looked like doilies. Kind of vibe.
I had a huge DVD collection, and when we moved house, last time. I literally had like a cardboard box full of them. And my wife was like, you're getting rid of the DVDs. We never watched them. I'm like, okay, fine. Got rid of the DVDs. I kept a little pouch, two pouches that I brought with me to Australia. Mm. So I don't have boxes for them anymore. So like, I'm keeping the Ziploc thing. And then when we moved into the new house, I started buying Blu-rays of movies that I'd never seen.
I'm going to buy like, twice as many Blu-rays.
She's like, what's this arriving from whatever? And I'm like, it's a Blu-ray. And she's like, why are you buying? It's like, well, I've never seen the film. Yeah. So I'm going to watch it.
You said DVDs.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, no, it's like,
it's not that.
You're getting rid of your, we have like a cabinet with my Blu-rays. Like, you're getting rid of your Blu-rays. I'm like, no, look, there's only like 50 of them. Like, but I have bought all the PTA ones.
Yeah,
Bar, Punch Drunk Love, and Hard Eight, because Punch Drunk Love is Criterion and it's like £30.
What?
Yeah.
What's Criterion mean?
Criterion Collection is like, if you're chosen to be part of the Criterion Collection, you're fancy.
Oh, okay.
It's the only one of his actually they chose for the Criterion.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Hence
they can jack up the price for
their Blu-rays.
And, it's catching on.
And Hard Eight, his first one, is like, you can't get it in print.
And with good cause. It's terrible.
It's not.
Have you seen Hardy?
Are you talking about Sydney?
Yeah. Oh! Hey. Hey. Now we're talking.
I'm a P.T. Anderson man. Yeah. I have seen it, yeah. I thought it was really good.
Terry loves it.
Finally. Especially for a first movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of... Now, I haven't seen it in a long time, but yeah. It was like... When I watched it, I was like, oh, yeah, Sam Jackson... He's a great actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You miss him. You miss that Sam Jackson.
I love scuzzy 90s Sam Jackson. You
yeah.
know?
That's yeah.
I thought Gwyneth Paltrow was fucking excellent in it as well.
Yeah, everyone was good. Like, even like young John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman's little cameo.
This is where me and Andy differ on this, because we've done all the Hoffmans now.
Yeah.
And the first one we did was obviously that one. Yeah. And he was like, I don't get it. This, I'm sick of him. And now, after last week's episode, he's like,
context.
Yeah, he's like, this love that everybody gives Philip Seymour Hoffman.
You did use the term sick of it. It was like Hard Eight. Yeah, I was like, I was sick of the ass kissing, because I hadn't seen it up until this point. And well, you know, but he had that scene in Hard Eight, and Terry was like, well, what about the best scene? And I was like, what? I was racking my, I was like, what could he possibly mean? Like Philip Seymour Hoffman scene. Like, I was like, what
scene?
The scene where he is electric. You're like, this guy.
I wouldn't think, well, that guy can act.
Yeah.
From that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to relitigate it.
Should we get into it?
Yeah, why don't we just get into it?
Great. Now that we're talking about it. All right.
It's the tail end of the psychedelic 60s, and paranoia is running the day. If it isn't Charlie Manson, it's the LAPD or the FBI or the mysterious body of something called the Golden Fang.
So what's all this now?
Everything's gone from groovy to where you at, man, suggesting a high level of fear or discomfort with the way things are headed. Hey, you. This is Doc Sportello. He's a private investigator.
Whoa.
Are you all right?
Am I?
Are you?
And like a peculiar planet in today's horoscope, in through the door walks Doc's ex-old lady Shasta and those five little words.
I need your help, Doc.
It's too bad that fear should be running sunny Southern California as in days of old, like the Watts riots or the Hollywood blacklist.
Look at the greedy little hippie.
But every once in a while, a hero like Doc Sportello shows up to help salvage his generation and guide it back to more merciful shores.
That was, of course, the trailer for 2014's Inherent Vice, the seventh film to be written and directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. Lads, care for a bit of boyf?
Please.
We've changed it since the last time we've been here, Ed. They're no longer fun facts. It's box office and interesting facts.
Yeah.
So, Andy...
Boyf.
In a sort of a New York-y accent. Yeah.
Hey, boy, give me the boyf.
Hey, a boyf in here.
When's that boyf arriving?
That's some prime boyf.
Yeah.
Hey, you boyfs want to play stickball?
Okay, Andy, can I take a stab at the budget?
Can you remind me what the last one was?
So the Master was 32 million budget. There Will Be Blood was 25 million. Punch Drunk Love, 25 million.
I am going to say 20 million.
Oh. 25 million for Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, I know.
And the Mass and There Will Be Blood. There Will Be Blood was the same.
Yeah.
How mad is that?
I'd say 8 million went on Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler's pocket. Yeah. Fees and whatnot. Yeah. I imagine Joaquin Phoenix wouldn't take. He's more of an artiste.
Mm-hmm. He is
a money hungry guy. Although it is a period movie. What do you say? 20?
20.
I say 15.
It is 20. Much of fucking hate.
Fucking come on!
Hate to give it to him. You're in 5 heads.
What an unbelievable hot streak here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Opening weekend.
Friday. Am I right?
That's what I was going to say. 14 million.
Okay.
Opening weekend. I'd say. Maybe less.
To give you a bit of context,
yes,
The Master was 32 million,
yeah,
and it grossed overall 28 million.
Okay, so the budget was 32
domestically in its full run.
No, international, worldwide, total gross was 28 million.
Top flop.
Opening weekend for this one, so it's 20 million is the budget. Andy said 14.
I'm going to go lower now, at least half that. Yeah, let's go. 8.4 million.
So you're down. In 5 head. You get the point.
If you're within 5 million, you get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Domestic total?
14. If I keep saying it, it'll be right one day.
16.
8 million. What? Domestic total.
So 4 million open a weekend and then doubled that over its entire run.
It only ran for 11 weeks.
Right.
And it only ran in like, its highest was like 700 theatres, which is not a lot.
Okay.
It's not a wide release. Considering like, say, Oppenheimer opened to like 4,000 screens.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers didn't really give it a huge push.
Right.
Worldwide total?
14 million.
I would say about 2 million.
It's 14 million.
Oh no!
I knew it!
Wow. This fucking game.
I just keep going with it.
I'm happy for you, but I'm sad for Pete D. Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy, though, that can literally. Like, the box office doesn't really matter.
Why doesn't it matter? He's had a few flops now.
Yeah, because he is one of the last...
Chased out of Hollywood.
Tours in Hollywood.
Yeah, but like in 20 years' time. What are they going to remember? The Meg 2 made more money than...
Exactly. You know what I mean? This movie was on like 30 people's like best of year list as either number 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like...
It's one of those.
It's one of those. Like, when we were talking about it, like, this was nominated for 2 Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you want to take a stab, Andy.
Best actor?
Nope.
Best supporting actor?
Nope. Ed, I'm going to toss it over to you.
Best adapted screenplay.
Very good. Did not win.
Did not win. Well, he's never won.
He never wins.
He never won anything. Criminal. I mean, he's won.
And it was nominated for another?
Yeah.
Not best score.
No, it was not nominated for best
score. Great score.
Well, really, nice score. Johnny Greenwood again, killing it.
I listened to it on headphones this time around.
Oh, nice.
Quite nice. I've gotten into listening to listening to things music with my ears. It's this new craze that's sweeping the nation. No, just
scores.
Just watching movies with headphones on or TV shows.
On the TV, you've got like the Bluetooth.
I've got just cans over, like plugged in. Because I watch them through my PS4. So I just plug it into the controller and it's like...
It really does immerse you way more.
Yeah.
I've watched one or two on the laptop even just with these, and I'm like, oh, I'm in the movie. You know, whereas before I'm kind of like, it's a bit tinny. Well, out of the laptop it is, but you know what I mean? Like, it makes a difference.
It was less confusing this time around because the first, well, I mean, guess we'll get to that. First time I watched the movie, I was confused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I am, I'm not confused.
So you'd seen it before?
Yeah. This would have been my third time watching it.
So you picked it because... You're a fan of the movie?
Well, I'm a fan of Mr. Anderson's movies in general.
Mr. Anderson.
some of his movies. What's that?
Mr. Man from the Matrix.
Mr. Anderson.
Your movies are good. I particularly enjoy Boogie Nights. All
and
that
cock at the end,
fucking and rutting.
any guesses for the second Oscar was nominated for?
Production design. Is it something to do with the design of the movie?
It is something to do with the design.
It better be good.
Costume design.
Yeah, like, man. Period piece. Like all the attire that they're wearing, like, okay. is very much. Like, there's some. What do the kids say? There's some good drip.
There is some good drip. Is that drip?
Yeah.
They're dripping.
Is he a drip king, Joaquin Phoenix, in this?
A drip king.
Is that what they say?
Those sandals don't come. Oscar nominated sandals.
They lost costume design to Grand Budapest Hotel, which.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That won like 8 awards that year. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Lost adapted screenplay to The Imitation Game. Which I'm like,
never seen it. Never.
It's so boring. It's, you know,
it seems like pure
anything, it's Oscar bait.
Yeah, like, I was just gonna say anything that has the faintest whiff of Oscar bait. I'm like,
yeah.
Fuck or it's like off. It's like, you know, it's your tent pole. Like, oh, it's a war biopic. You know, you're like, okay,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck off. Like, I'm not against war movies because I think stuff like Apocalypse Now or Saving Private Ryan are like absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
but like, there's ones where you're like, all right, like, don't give me that. Like,
shove it down my throat.
No, don't just like, you know, you don't. It's almost like you don't. You don't believe in it. It's like, but if I make this movie,
Oscars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Okay. Rotten Tomatoes score. It's fresh, certified fresh, Andy.
I don't. The 72.
Okay.
Weirdly enough, in my head I went 71.
Oh,
I know, it's like side by side.
74.
Wow.
Yeah, both get it. Now, nice. Audience score.
27.
Out of what, 100?
Yeah. You're showing your cards there.
No,
Andy.
No. I just said, audience what score. Those people would think.
No, I would say it would be in the 60s. 62.
53.
Ooh, okay.
Not
great.
Not, you know, not the easiest one, I don't think. Here's some IF, some interesting
facts.
Downey Jr., Robert.
Robert.
Yeah. Here.
He originally expressed interest to play Doc when the film was first announced.
That would have been interesting.
Mm.
Well, PTA opted to work with Joaquin Phoenix again after enjoying his work on The Master so much. Apparently, PTA thought Downey was too old for the role, despite various places citing scheduling issues as the cause.
He could have done it. Well, they say scheduling,
like because he's doing all this Marvel stuff. Yeah. But I Anderson kind of they had come close to making a Pinocchio movie together. Yeah. If you remember hearing that,
yeah.
Which would have been very interesting, I think.
Downey and P.T. Anderson.
PTA, yeah.
Whatever he's called. Downey. It's different every move.
Yeah, no, like...
Downey Jr., Robert is Geppetto.
I mean, like, his dad is in Boogie Nights, if you remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's not a MP, that's a YP.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson reportedly went about adapting the book by typing it up word for word and starting from there. There are 384 pages in the novel.
Why did he type it up?
He just thought it'd be easier to...
And then insert or bits or move whatever, bits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Have you read the novel, Ed?
No.
It is a very interesting read.
Yeah.
But it is, I would say, the fact that he's able to get anything on screen that resembles a plot is very impressive to me.
Right.
Because it is like, it's kind of like No Country for Old Men. And that there's very like you don't know when your sentences start and stop, or like there's very like little structure to it.
Yeah,
It's a good read if you like
the
kind of noir.
Book?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed the movie more, but if you like a noir kind of book,
yeah,
it's good. He has Paul Thomas Anderson cited Raymond Chandler, Cheech and Chong, and Abram Zucker productions as inspirations for the film. He also used the fabulous Freak Brothers comic strip as a research bible during his writing process. Okay. You introduced me to those guys.
Oh, yeah.
When we were in Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah. Literally erased that from my memory.
You were like, we're in a cafe, the fabulous Freak Brothers, Terry. I'm like, I don't know. All this mad.
I feel like I've lived 100 years.
Freak Brothers. I'm not
I can't even, like, it's like, I can't like picture them in my
real,
head.
Real, like, hippie cartoon
big
comics.
Nose, sort of.
And that's their kind of saying, like, Doc, when I read that, it's like, read that, and then they had a picture of Doc next to, like, Fabulous Freak Brothers, and I was like, kind of does look one of them a little bit, but it's kind of like elongated features, big circular glasses, hats, big hair, stuff like that.
He does have a big hat in the movie.
He does have a big hat.
I like it. I like that
Oscar nominated hat.
The set was described as organized chaos. Martin Short stated he felt very, very safe as he was working with a great director that would let you do what you needed to do. Owen Wilson has stated that he didn't necessarily know what he was doing and was encouraged to try anything. And Brolin has stated that there was a strange lack of pretense on the set and cited the chocolate...
strange lack of pretense. He loves a bit of pretense.
Yeah. A little bit of pretense.
I think in terms of, like, you know, other Hollywood productions, like,
they
all kind of said, like, it was... You're encouraged to kind of...
Do your thing.
Yeah, like, he mentioned the chocolate banana scene in the car as an example of PTA, just letting the camera roll and work your magic.
Right.
So, like, the whole bit where he's, like, choking on the banana.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, it's not in the script. It was just, like, they let the camera roll. And,
oh, great.
Yeah, you see what you get.
Wow.
Well, Andy, moment of truth.
Me?
Yeah.
You know... I think I hate Paul Thomas Anderson. Another one that I fucking hated.
Really?
So bad. So confusing. So too many characters. Just too fucking... I feel like he's one of these directors who, like... I hate these sort of movies. I'm using the word hate here about these movies. It became just one big jumble that I had no interest in solving. Just go on record, fucking hate. Almost worse than The Master. I think The Master was probably worse.
Okay.
But for me.
Okay.
I did not like it at all.
Was there anything you liked about it?
I liked Brolin and I liked the soundtrack.
Okay.
I loved the soundtrack and I love Brolin. I think it was actually one of his best roles that I've seen him in.
Brolin is very, very funny.
I thought he was hilarious. And then I thought, like, I had a few genuine laughs the first few minutes where you first see Brolin, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good, like, brilliant. And then it's like, no. I've seen somewhere this had the gall to be categorized as a stoner comedy.
I mean, it's a very funny film.
No, it's not a stoner. It's certainly not a... Far too complicated to be a stoner. It's a stoner comedy.
What do you mean, like?
I mean, the lead character is completely stoned.
Yeah, but
all
there's
the
gotta
time.
Be more to that, though, than to make a stoner comedy. I just thought it was too...
Define stoner comedy to me here, just so I know where you're coming
easy
from.
Easy to follow.
Okay.
You know where you stand.
Mm.
And like, irreverent sort of...
Like a sort of a dude, where's my car kind of thing.
Yeah, so, it doesn't even have to be that lowbrow, like, but something along those lines.
Excuse me.
I mean, I loved Dude Wears My Car, or I did at the time, but I would not class this as... I would watch Dude Wears My Car 10 times in a row over having to watch this again.
No, you wouldn't.
I would.
No, you wouldn't.
100%.
Maybe let's try
I
that
would
out.
Rather work...
No, you wouldn't.
Work here for 2.5 hours than to sit and watch this movie again. I'd come in on a Saturday and do some work. I fucking hated it.
Wow, okay. I'm sorry.
Wowzers.
But that aside,
my intense hatred aside,
I'm curious to know what you both thought of it. Did you like this movie?
I've seen this movie 5 times.
5 times? And Ed, you've seen it 3.
Yeah, this is my 3rd time.
8 times between you.
Yeah. I went to see it twice in the cinema. I love this movie.
Wow.
Unapologetic. I went to see it, the original run. Here was a great Saturday. Fuck Barbie and Oppenheimer. I went to see this in the morning, and in the evening, Ex Machina. That's a good duel.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
I mean, I do want to go see both Barbie and Oppenheimer, but still.
Yeah,
I love this movie. I just, like...
Why?
I just find it very charming. I let it wash over me. I love a good detective plot. Like,
I actually felt Joaquin Phoenix wasn't the right person for that role. I didn't really, you know, I didn't feel like he, I don't know, maybe he gave exactly what they wanted and it just wasn't for, it wasn't for me, but I didn't, like, am I alone there? Do you think someone else might have done a better job than Joaquin Phoenix?
I think Robert Downey Jr., if he was younger,
like
he would have done
a
pretty good job. But
would
I
have
think,
had more charm if he was
I think there's something about the character that is inherently,
incoherent voice.
Incoherently vicious. There's something about the character that is kind of, he's not there a lot of the time.
He's supposed to be a bit off kilter. He's not supposed to be charming. Like,
he's kind of what made me laugh was all these note taking.
Yeah,
not a hallucination.
paranoia alert.
I just like, because I was kind of laughing because, and in that way it's left up to your interpretation. I was like, is he writing these because he's genuinely fucked, monged out of his brain, and he's trying to calm himself down?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he writing notes that he thinks are genuine notes, and then when he reads them back later on, when he's not sober but not as high, mm-hmm. will he understand the notes?
Yeah.
Or is he just writing notes to put across the impression that he's a good private detective, and this is what people expect? And I think in some ways, not knowing exactly what his motivations are for writing these things, it's maybe a little bit confusing, or his motivations aren't always clear at every step of the way.
That kind of depends on your outlook. Like, you would look at something like that and be like, oh, I wonder what that's all about. Or maybe it means this. Or like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Maybe. Whereas I think I'd be a bit more like, what's he doing? I don't understand. This makes me feel stupid and scared.
So hold on. Did you understand what happened with the plot?
No. I mean, by and large,
What was his...
Don't you dare put me on the spot.
What do you think his whole mission, for lack of a better word, was?
It was unclear. If I felt I was on the right track, and then something else would happen, I'm like, and then another.
What was the main thing?
He's a fucking detective, and he's solving some.
For who is he looking for?
Shit. First of all, he's looking for different people, though, right?
He's looking for Mickey Wolfman.
Yeah,
and then his girlfriend Shasta goes missing.
Yeah,
so like. And then he has all these little other subplots.
Yeah. Yeah. I just find that it got too complicated for me. And I'm not alone. Don't you dare look at me like that, Terry. I'm not alone.
Why?
Because I know that people also thought it was confusing.
Yeah, me. I did.
Yes.
I saw this in The Lighthouse. It was like a 35mm print that my younger brother, who's a big fan as well, we went to see it. He'd read the book, so he wasn't as confused as I was. But at a certain point, I remember thinking, who the fuck is Owen Wilson again? What's his connection here? And when I watched it this time, I put on the subtitles for the opening scene because I started watching it and I was like looking for my phone charger, and then it was on, I could hear it, and then I took my charger, and then I went and then I remembered, oh yeah, this is a really complicated movie, I have to rewind it.
You have to pay attention.
Start again. You have to pay attention. Yeah. Which sometimes annoys me about movies, where I'm like, oh fuck, I have to pay attention. And this time around, third time watching it, I was fully on board, fully paying attention. But then at a certain point towards the end, I was like, wait, who are these guys? And why are they connected to the thing?
Yeah.
And I got confused again.
Excellent. I'm actually delighted to hear that.
But I think in some ways that's the point of it.
It kind of is, I would say. Like, there's...
As in, it's adapting the book, which is... Very much like that.
Yeah, like the book is like,
it's like a Leaving Las Vegas sort of, like,
it's more like something like The Dice Man or something.
Leaving Las Vegas, what's the thing on
Fear and Loathing
in Las Vegas. Yeah, is it like that sort of like surreal roly-poly sort of movie?
Like, there's a scene in the book, or like a passage in the book, where he like takes acid and like walks out into the ocean, and it's like green diamonds, third dimension kind of stuff, and you're like, oh okay, like, that's not in the movie.
Yeah.
But, like, it can kind of, like, go rambling all over the place. And you're like, wait, hold on, let me go back a couple of pages. Like, what was he talking about? And now but where are we?
Does that not annoy you?
No, but I don't like, find the movie. I don't find example, the movie like that, though.
But did you find it confusing the first time you watched it?
No.
Okay.
But that, I don't know. Like I,
you just got it
because I've read like ready. 100 of these kind of like
you're saying like
yeah. Chandler novels, where, and it's always like twisty turny, and it's like somebody that's mentioned on page 20 comes back into it on page 200. You're like, what? Mm. Who's this? Oh, that was the guy that was mentioned offhandedly there. Yeah. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, because even when he finds Wolfman and he chats to him, it's unclear as to. Because the first time I saw it, I was like, "Who's this guy again?"
He's the guy. He's the MacGuffin. Like.
And then I remembered. Oh yeah, he's the dude. Yeah. And I only remember because it was Eric Roberts.
Great performance. That was a great one scene performance from Eric Roberts.
Yeah, because he seems completely out of it.
Then sad, and then like.
And it is that kind of weird thing where the movie sort of ends.
Yeah,
the way a regular movie would end, but then there's another hour left.
The case is wrapped up. They find him. He gets, you know, Eric Roberts is running the casino in Vegas, and then Shasta returns.
Yeah.
And then they have that amazing scene where like she comes back and is like basically turned back to normal, and then you know, they have sex.
They fuck.
Yeah. But like watching it this time around, I kind of picked up on the themes way more. It's like, oh, like she's trying to point out to him that like you're no different from any of these people that you think you're better than, you know, these corporate fuckers, because you are doing to me, like she's kind of goading him into like, you know, being rough with her, taking her the same way your man does. And it's like, oh, right, yeah.
Showing her who's boss.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of thing. But like that, you know, that's not his style or whatever, but it's actually in him. And like this, again, this time around, it was like so much picked up on the themes way more of like the 60s are done.
Mm.
You know, you're in 1970. It's not communism that's the threat. It's, you know, capitalism that's the threat. Yeah. Like there's all this stuff going on. And there's also, it's also just like I'm saying to you every time, I think very well made movies that have a lot of enjoyable scenes in them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were, if it kind of, this one's like more than any of the other ones seems more like a series of sketches put together.
I was looking at a PTA list today.
Okay.
His movies ranked. And this was bottom.
Whose list was this?
Variety or something. The first one that came up on Google. I didn't look. There was bottom.
Would you have this bottom?
It's the worst one so far.
It's
for you?
It's the one it's probably the one I enjoyed the least, because The Master I got, but I just didn't like it. Whereas this I just didn't. And then I find after about an hour and a half, then I'm like, I'm so lost that everything else happens. It's just something I'm looking at. I may as well look at people just walking by outside the window. You know what I mean? I was just like, well, I get like, that looks good, but like what, that means nothing to me because I'm not in the movie. I'm outside the movie.
Okay.
Do you think it was too long? Ed, do you think it was too long?
I think the first time I saw it, and this does happen to me sometimes in the cinema, it's not very well air conditioned and I'm tired.
Yeah.
But that very long scene, because there are a couple of scenes where he really holds the frame. He pushes in a little bit. And he is the master. He is really good at these kind of long takes where all of a sudden, and I was kind of more paying attention to the camera work and to the camera movement this time around. But he moves in almost imperceptibly close, and then all of a sudden you're in a much closer and a different frame shot, and I'm kind of like, oh, how did he do that? But that where Shasta comes back,
that's all one take,
but I think I was like falling asleep at that point,
right,
in the cinema, because I think my brain was like, oh, the movie's all wrapped up,
this is the end,
and this is the end. If this was The Big Lebowski, it'd all be over by now, kind of thing. Because I kept thinking about The Big Lebowski in a, not that you can compare it to The Big Lebowski, but in some ways it is. It's a stoner, although he's not a real detective. He's just kind of thrown into it.
But it's a noir. It's, you know, a modern noir movie. Like,
and it's not as complicated a plot, and it's not as long.
Yeah. Like, there's kind of similar plots, and they're both convoluted stuff that doesn't really add up to a lot of, you know, anything. But that's kind of the genre a lot of the time with, you know, detective noir kind of thing. With Lebowski, like, it's way more succinct.
Yeah.
And it is...
Although I think Lebowski wraps up the movie a bit too quickly.
Yeah, it kind of has the foot down at the end. Like,
yeah, it's like they're in a rush to get it finished or to get to the credits.
On the opposite of you.
This is not a rush.
Like, on the opposite of you, where I'm like, yeah, let me hang out with these guys for as long. And you're like, go, I want to go.
2.5
I want to watch
hours.
More. It's always it sunny. It is a Philadelphia.
It doesn't have to be. It's just that there's certain... This is not the sort of movie that appeals to me at all.
This is a bit more
and
plotty.
Everyone has different movie tastes and all that. I just like if you're a real lover of you don't even necessarily need to be, but if you're a real lover of cinema and acting and the craft and all this sort of stuff, like there's loads to appreciate in it if you're looking for it. I'm not looking for that sort of. I'm looking for just a good movie. Good performances, good everything, but I just, you know what I mean? Not too long.
I worry about our next
2.5 hours.
I worry about our next two movies.
This
as well.
Did not need to be 2.5 hours long. I mean,
probably not. Like,
you could have easily. This is out of all the movies. This could have been 1.40 hours.
But what's interesting is, and like he has kind of said that it's like he's adapting. He had no problems when he was adapting Oil by Upton Sinclair.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to make it my own thing. Whereas with Thomas Pynchon, he kind of had a bit more...
He wanted to stay true to the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he was like... And he's like, I did cut out a fair chunk, but like, he's like, I love this book and I wanted to make a proper adaptation of it.
Well, that was one of my notes was like, I was like, did this movie need to be made?
I think it's the first one of his books that's ever been made. This guy is like a very strange individual. Like, he's apparently in the movie. Nobody knows what this guy looks like.
Right.
He was in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And he had a bag over his head. Yeah, do you remember that
so
one?
So yeah, couldn't even have an animated version of him.
That's
yeah,
the whole...
No one knows what he... I think the last photograph of him was from the 50s or something. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But...
I quite like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. there's something admirable.
Yeah,
well,
I love the movie.
There's never anything weird about someone who doesn't want to be seen
exactly.
if they're a famous person.
Yeah.
That seems like a perfectly normal thing.
Yeah, exactly.
To not want your face everywhere and not want everyone to go, aren't you famous novelist Thomas Pynchon? You know?
No. There ain't no Tom here that never was. but where would this rank in terms of your Paul Thomas Anderson movies?
Yeah, it wouldn't be my my favorite is Boogie Nights for sure.
It's a different beast to that, like
yeah.
Boogie Nights is 2:39, and feels shorter than this movie.
Yeah, Boogie Nights the only kind of and it's not even a lull because it's kind of like the calm before the storm. It's when everything starts to go to shit and you have that sort of like a mini Magnolia scene with the whole.
Dirk getting beaten up, Roller Girl.
Yeah, Donut Shop.
Donut Shop.
Bang Bang Blood Blood.
fucking hilarious.
The Bang Bang Blood Blood.
Yeah.
I love that.
Poor
I
Don
love
Cheadle.
Punch Drunk Love, just because when I saw it in the cinema, I had a real... something about the cinema I went to see it in had a really nice sound system.
Yeah.
And the music score, but also... The sound design in that movie is kind of underrated. I think
that one jumped up so much for me this time around that it's like number 2 in my rankings at the moment. Where like that, the sound design where he's walking around his warehouse or whatever, you're like, oh, I'm in his brain. Like I feel shit. Like what's going on? Like I feel almost like something is, you know, my skin is crawling a little bit or something like that. Like you know.
Well, actually, I probably put There Will Be Blood above that one. Then that one.
It's top. And top then.
For me. Yeah, like There Will Be Blood, I loved. For all my talk about long, sprawling movies, that one I thought was... I was captivated. Every minute of it, I was captivated.
I've watched the beginning of that movie, as in the opening kind of silent.
Yeah.
Just with that, like, crazy score. I've watched that... maybe 20 times.
So good.
Not like, the whole movie, but I'll watch
just
it.
Just that bit.
It's one of the best opening chunks of a movie. Just
like even Day-Lewis, when he falls and you hear like, and then like you see him crawling, pushing himself with his leg up this giant hill. You're like, oh, okay. Like,
this one would be lower in the rankings for sure, but it's kind of like with the next movie you're doing. What was the next movie?
Phantom Thread is next. We're Phantom going Thread. Chronologically.
I have only seen that once.
Me too.
Not in the cinema.
Yeah.
And I think I have a weird association with a crazy ex-girlfriend. As in, I watched it with her.
Yeah.
And she was like, what the fuck is this? she was American and she didn't like it at all. And I think her not liking it.
Yeah, oh, that affects you. Like,
definitely.
I was like, so I've almost completely forgotten the whole movie.
Oh,
but you just remember thinking, yeah, I didn't the like vibes. That.
But same with The Master. Master I really enjoyed, but there's a lot of his movies that you can kind of instantly enjoy. It's like Boogie Nights is like it's like a cocaine rush.
Yeah.
And then there's stuff like The Master, stuff like Inherent Vice, Phantom Thread, that as I'm watching them, I'm going, all right, there's an awful lot to take. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
I need to give it a second or third viewing. And that's kind of why I like his movies, because you can get an awful lot out of the even with this movie, 6 months time I'll probably watch it again.
Good man,
on a on a bigger screen maybe.
It's funny because I've also seen people saying that about this movie, where it's like, it does require a second or third watch, and I'm like, my instinct is always to be like, well absolutely not then.
I just want to talk before we finish. I want to talk about a few scenes that I think are amazing, right? One of the best bits of filmmaking.
I'm going to eat my mint twirl while you guys are talking
about
that.
That's your inherent vice. Mint. See, I feel the same way about mint twirls as you do about inherent vice.
I fucking hate them.
Doesn't eat them.
No, I have to eat several of them over a number of years in order to get acquired taste. No.
I think one of the best bits of filmmaking throughout his whole career is the opening to when he puts her in the car. And that song by Can, that villain scene song. And when it goes like, boom, and the font.
Yeah.
I get
the timing of that.
My hairs are on my arm even thinking about it now. I think it's fucking amazing.
Wow.
I think the scene where he goes to the Pussy Eater special. And you see, I don't know how, I feel like my mind is playing tricks on me every time I see it. When all those people mobilize.
Yeah.
He's walking along and he's looking, something is bugging him, and he looks around and then he goes in and you just see there are people in camouflage or whatever, but it's just 20 people move and then they descend again.
And you could miss it. Because I missed it the first time or the second time around. But in the cinema, first time around, I was like, what the fuck?
What is that like? What is that? And there's that's what he said. He put in so much stuff in the screen that that's why he was saying it's like he considered it to be like a Zaz thing, where it's like he's trying to fill the screen with little gags or Easter eggs or whatever like that. I do think Phoenix is brilliant in it. I think he is suitably off kilter. The scene where he is talking with your woman Jenna Malone with the fake teeth.
Yeah.
And when he does that, he looks at the baby and it's almost like a Looney Tunes tie,
the screen. Yeah.
Interesting. And I'm like, that shouldn't for me work because it's not naturalistic acting.
It's a little bit too far.
Yeah, but he almost turns into a cartoon character.
That's the thing, there was a few times where I'm like, tonally I couldn't grasp this movie. I'm like, because I laughed at that, and I laughed at some of the more sort of obvious comedy bits, I guess, with Brolin as well.
I do think Brolin is brilliant.
Brolin was so brilliant. And I didn't actually know he was capable of being that funny. I hadn't seen him in a lot of comedy roles.
The scene where he's like, Shasta Faye, she's gone, man. And she's gone. He's like, she's out there, man. She pulled a fast one on us. Bigfoot, what the fuck? And he's like, man, she's gone. He's just
and you're kind of going, is he doing it on purpose?
Yeah,
or is he just, I'm like, but that's the thing about him. He's kind of
deliberately vague.
And he's got this simmering kind of anger. And then when he comes in and eats, I think. I think they shot a bunch of weird exchanges between them. But with him, when it cuts to him just eating the weed. He's like, takes the whole board and he's like,
Joaquin Phoenix,
like a priest getting the flakes of the Eucharist off the corner. And he's got holding the tear on his face.
He's like, oh my god, my fucking weed.
But like the scene that for some reason it really, I was like, this is so accurate, because I've done acid, and whenever you see people on acid in movies or TV shows, it's always, you know, fucking incense, peppermints, and kaleidoscopy effects, and I'm like, what the that's not what it's like. But when they go, himself and his mate, who I was like,
Genus.
I was like, where did he come from? Again, it's one of these things. Where did he come from?
He's in the very start.
Yeah.
Where he's walking like, hey, Dinas. But he just kind of like floats in there in the movie. Yeah. Like.
Yeah. And they're both, because of the extrasensory perception they get from taking acid, and they're both on acid. And Phoenix plays it so perfectly. And when he's having that conversation with Owen Wilson, and he's whispering, and the camera's like slowly moving in, and Joaquin Phoenix is playing it someone who's on acid, who's kind of half freaking out, and he's asking questions, and just the way his voice is and the way he carries himself is like so accurate. I was like, I mean, if you told me he'd actually taken acid, if he's on acid in that scene, I go,
And probably was known him.
No, but like there's
method actor to the fullest.
Like, but like that, like where he's like, anytime I see him smoking a joint.
Yeah,
you know, you watch people on TV and like it's smoking joint, like, well, they're not really, or you don't feel like it. Like every time you see him, like when he's like looking through the case files and he's like smoking a joint, even the way he pulls on the joint, that is accurate to me.
Yeah.
And your buddy Keith Jardine was in it. The Dean of Bean,
Dean of Bean, of course.
He's the guy with the fighter. What's his name? Puck.
Oh yeah,
Puck Beaverton with the swastika on his face.
I actually didn't even cop to that. That was Keith Jardine.
He's a former UFC fighter.
The Dean of Mean, of course.
Because that scene was terrible. I forgot about that scene being so terrifying.
Yeah.
And like, you know, this is real, because it's kind of like, hey, it's a stoner detective comedy. He gets bopped on the head and and all
like,
this kind of stuff.
And he's involved in like every crime that happens. He's at the periphery.
But
nothing's gonna happen to Doc.
He's not in danger. But then it's all of a sudden.
I'm going to inject you with fucking, you know, uncut heroin, and you're going to die of an overdose, quote unquote. Like,
I have to say, terrifying. One thing I did appreciate about the movie was just Owen Wilson's whispering.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but if there was like, you know, one of those YouTube compilations of just Owen Wilson whispering for an hour, I think I could happily just sit and watch it in some sort of like weird ASMR sort of like this is very soothing. It's like southern accent with a
I think this was one of his first ones after he had that suicide attempt.
This
is one of his first ones back, because he was supposed to do Tropic Thunder. And McConaughey played his part after.
Oh, right.
Okay.
And this is like one of his first ones back, because he hadn't done it in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And like, he's so good in it, I think.
Yeah.
Like, when he's like, when he says that, he's like, any look at that little kid blues? He's like, oh, I blew this solo, man. You know, and you're like, you do feel from him. Like, you know,
I feel like he's actually great in everything that
pretty
I've seen
much
him in.
Like,
I haven't seen him in anything and thought, like, Owen Wilson. I didn't really like Owen Wilson in that.
I've been watching that Loki TV series.
He was great in
and
that.
I was like, there was. It was a scene where I was like, holy fuck, like, this is going beyond what a Marvel TV series have. Like,
Well, look, I don't know if you have more that you want to add, but
not really. I want to say some great cameo performances. Martin Short,
he
was great.
Benicio del Toro, I thought was great as well. Like,
I love their friendship.
Yeah.
I remember watching it, I was going, I like their friendship.
I want to go and order some fucked up seafood.
I thought she was so good, the waitress, because I was like, I totally forgot that line. You're going to want to get nice and fucked up before you eat this
and
meal.
Like, oh, definitely. Like, what they're ordering, it sounds disgusting.
It does, yeah.
Like,
well, all those ways that he has this way of shooting just a conversation between people. Like when,
like that conversation they have is nonsensical. We're like,
yeah,
who is this they're talking about? It's some communist actor that goes away and comes back then the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of is dropped in when they're in the fucking the wellness retreat later on.
Yeah, yeah.
He's on TV and your man, and it's so funny. That guy who's like showing him around, he's like mouthing all the words like, you commie scum.
He's,
or whatever like that.
He's brilliant.
He's so good.
It's like, all these little bit characters that it's kind of like the way you get in a Coen Brothers movie, where you have an actor who's just in one scene, but they're so memorable.
Yeah,
like Belladonna is her adult porn star name. I can't remember. She's not credited. She's credited for her real name. Yeah. She has this conversation where he says, "Hey, he's got the laughing gas and whatever."
Because
Paul Thomas Anderson's such a genuine fan of pornography.
Yeah,
yeah.
He often casts porn stars in his movies, and she's one of them.
In Boogie Nights,
there's always some weird sex thing.
Nina Hartley.
Nina Hartley.
And then she's amazing.
The other one who plays the judge in Boogie Nights is, I can't remember her name, but
Amber Waves' character is based on
her.
I can't remember her name either. Yeah,
I want to say actually, just before we go as well, I think Catherine Waterston is phenomenal in this movie, and like this was like, she's Shasta Fey. But like, I remember seeing her and I was like, I was like in love with her when I first seen her. Like, I think she's amazing, like, in this movie. Still think she's amazing. Every time she pops up and something, I think she's brilliant.
I love that scene where they're kind of reminiscing on them getting the phone call. Again, it was like, are they just really stoned or what's going on here? And they're running out in the rain and
Neil Young is playing.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. I have to say, Neil Young, whenever there was a Neil Young song playing over it, it really made me like, especially the rain thing. I'm like, there are two songs that I knew well, but I hadn't heard in a long time.
Yeah,
so Journey into the Past.
Actually, that's another thing. I think he's one of the best music guys.
Yeah.
And in the case, obviously, like, Johnny Greenwood is now his sort of composer guy.
Yeah.
But his musical choices, like, a lot of people say Scorsese, I'm like, man, he's used Shout Away in every fucking it's probably in Hugo, it's in every fucking movie he's ever done. But he's got a great
in Hugo great range. Give me Shelter is in Hugo as well.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know you're going to get to Licorice Pizza, but Licorice Pizza is one of those movies where it's a kind of perfect marriage of all of his kind of old stuff and new stuff.
Yeah,
but the soundtrack for that is unbelievable because it's all from the same year.
It's
brilliant
on vinyl. I got it, like, Faye got me that for on vinyl. But like, my Spotify this year, my number one song was Stumbling In.
Yeah,
from that soundtrack, and it was just like, because I saw it in the movie, I'd never heard it. It's like Susie Quattro or something, and it's like, saw it in the movie, and I just had it on repeat because it's such an earworm.
Yeah.
Like, it's on like my daughter Bonnie's playlist.
I look forward to that one now.
But he's great at picking the right song for the right scene.
Yeah.
And there's so many, like, you know, the can tune at the start where
and it plays for like the whole intro of the whole
thing.
That's
what I like as well, that he plays the actual song. He just doesn't the instrumental part of it or do an edit in it, because that's always kind of jarring to me. It's like,
Scorsese got
it kind of adds
that
to the reality of the scene that people would be talking while a song is on.
Yeah, it's not like, it's like, oh, the lyrics stop and then the dialogue starts.
So you can hear the dialogue. Because when that thing happens, I'm like, oh, I'm watching a movie. This is a movie.
Movie. Right. What's your rating then, Andy?
Give it a 5.
Okay.
5 out of 5. Wow.
5 stars.
Yeah. 5 out of 4 on the Roger Ebert scale.
What did I give
the master? 6.
I'll give this 6 as well.
Okay.
And that's because I know there are elements there that I just didn't appreciate.
So when we do a rewatch of it,
never. I will say this.
Let's go to Amsterdam, take some mushrooms, and watch this movie.
I can't think of mixing a better or worse thing. I would love to go to Amsterdam and do mushrooms again, but there is absolutely no chance. I don't think there's a chance I'm ever going to watch a Paul Thomas Anderson movie again.
Well, when his new one comes out, we'll have to do one on the pod.
No chance.
Yeah. We'll go see it.
Oh God.
We're just going to have to listen to the rest of the season.
But the thing is, I liked Boogie Nights and I liked Magnolia. And I loved There Will Be Blood, so I was like, I really like Punch Drunk Love, so I was like, okay, great, I'm into this guy now. But
he is a very different filmmaker post There Will Be Blood. I will say, like, his movies are different. I think Licorice Pizza kind of comes closest to the early stuff. Licorice Pizza is kind of a piece maybe with Boogie Nights or something like that.
It's, I kind of think of it as, when I saw it, I was like, it's like Boogie Nights and Punch Drunk Love had a baby. It is a sort of an in-between,
and it still had its 13-inch cock.
So what would you give this
Licorice
this
penis
movie?
Hey,
Licorice penis. Out of 10,
yeah,
I give it, I would give it, can we do halves?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He does 0.75s.
That's the point you don't glove, 9.75 for me.
I mean, come on,
that's ridiculous. 7.5 for me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I give it a 7.5. It is, I find it a little bit long and a little bit vignette-y. Is that a word? Vignette-y?
How do you mean?
Vignettes,
yeah,
you know, there's like
sketchy, like, you know,
sketchy, because
I mean?
Yeah, right. When he goes to the Pussy Palace, whatever, yeah, it's called, and it has those like shots of the buntings, yeah, and stuff, and the music, yeah, it's a little bit,
it kind of like
stop starty.
Yeah,
the way you could talk about it is, let's talk about the scene where they do coke with Martin Short, or let's talk about the scene where he's in the house with the surf rock band, you know, you could talk about scene by scene as opposed to
as a whole.
Yeah,
what you would know? You give it?
I'm going to give it a 9. I just...
Unbelievable. This is unbelievable.
I love it. I love this movie.
Isn't it mad, like, that we're actually mates? You get me? It's such wildly different views.
If this was on TV, I'm like, I'm watching it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I would laugh press the button extra hard.
Any of his movies, I'm in the bag for. Now, again, I've only seen Phantom Thread the once. I saw it in the cinema and I really liked it.
I'm excited to see Day-Lewis
again. I bought it to watch.
Yeah.
So
his last movie.
Yeah.
Because is that streaming anywhere?
No, I think
very few of these movies are streaming, right?
They were on, Their Ruby Blood is on Netflix.
Yeah.
Phantom Thread was on Netflix, and like Licorice Pizza is on Amazon.
Right.
There's a few, The Master used to be on Netflix, and I know this was on Amazon as well, so kind of in and out of the rotation, I guess.
Yeah.
Awards. Ed Harris Award for Excellence in Acting.
Brolin. For his comedic chops. Yeah.
I'd give it to Phoenix.
You're gonna give
Although
it to
I do think Catherine.
I'm going to go with Catherine for mine.
Because she does a lot in with very little.
Yeah,
and she is essentially a kind of human MacGuffin.
Yeah,
yeah.
But her face, like every time you see her, she, you know, that scene, the big scene where they have together, like when she's like lying down on his lap and she's like saying all this stuff, you're like, there's like five different things going on at once, and then at the end, she looks so fucking sad.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, this poor girl.
Or even at the start, because I watched it twice essentially.
That opening scene.
I turned off the captions. I was like, I'm just gonna watch this normally. She goes through the ringer of emotions on her.
She's kind of flirty and confident and then scared. And I think she's great. Like, so I'll give it to her. Daniel Plainview line reading award.
Brolin.
Which one?
The fucking the one we were talking about.
She's out there.
She's gone. Whatever.
Have you got one, a particular line reading that you enjoyed?
I like the scene where Benicio del Toro is explaining everything of the Golden Fang and all this kind of stuff.
How ridiculous, as well, by the way. We haven't even talked about the Golden Fang. Yeah. He's like, you know, it's a international crime syndicate. Oh, no, wait, it's a dentist.
It's a retirement tax haven.
Like, he's like, check his neck for like golden bite marks.
Yeah,
what?
He does check. But he's just very stoned and confused, and he just keeps asking him for clarification. Yeah. He's just getting very confused. I thought that was very well played. Or the scene with him and Owen Wilson, where he's on acid and Owen Wilson is whispering.
Oh yeah.
And they're
that was good
when they sit down and have that quote unquote normal back and forth conversation before the person leaves.
Yeah,
and then they start talking and he's whispering.
And when that happens, actually, that's like that Here Come the Ho-Dads song is on, and when that person leaves, it kind of, this Johnny Greenwood score kicks in and it closes in. Me just Brolin with at the pancake. Moto Panabegu. Moto Panabegu. It's coming, it's coming. Like, just like screaming at him. Like,
brilliant.
I burst out laughing.
He was great, I have to say. Now, for all me, I'll be giving out, he was actually brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah, very good.
Ed, have you got it in the plug before we finish up?
When is this going out?
Next week.
Tuesday.
I have several gigs. I'm doing my solo show in various venues.
Nice. Oh,
excellent.
I'm in the Roisin Dove on the 25th of August. I'm
great
in
spot.
Collins in Cork in September 20th of October. No, sorry. I'm somewhere else the 20th of October. It's all on my Instagram.
Yeah.
Check his Instagram.
Check my Instagram. Follow me on Instagram. I'm 20 followers away from a 3-picture deal at Paramount.
Nice.
So, hey, it helps. I've got my own podcast, Edwin Salmon of Knowledge.
Is that the name of the show as well?
That's the name of the
live show
as well. So, check me out at EDWINSAMMON, because I have to spell it.
Salmon.
So, there's new episodes of my podcast coming. It's been dormant for about a year. So, we're doing, myself and my wife, Cara, are doing episodes together where we talk about things that interest us in
what could possibly go wrong.
Brilliant.
Nothing so far. Although we did re-record the very first episode.
Had to get that plate smashing sound out of there.
Yeah. A lot of editing of, you know, lip smacks and furrowed brows, which you can amazingly hear,
you can hear the audio recording. The brow furrow.
you can actually hear the moment his brow furrows. You can find us at What's So Great About Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and Instagram and TikTok, and WSGA Pod on Twitter.
And if you're so inclined, you can head on over behind the paywall to our Patreon for the low fee of $5 a month. You get access to all our back catalogue of What's So Great About series. We've got What's So Great About MCU, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About 90s Action Flicks, and What's So Great About Big Willie's Flops, aka Big Will Smith's Bad Movies, plus a bunch of great other name. Bonus content where it's like a bunch of top five needle drops in movies, yeah, which features some Paul Thomas Anderson.
How about this? The entire episode of Top 5 Needle Drops video is available on our Instagram.
How about that? Yeah. I may or may not have been on drugs on an episode.
Terry, we're doing a top five. Terry's like, gives me his number one straight away. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, we're done here then.
If you want to see a video of somebody who has taken an edible and is like struggling to keep it together,
it's the latest video.
That's all I watch on YouTube.
It's the latest video on our TikTok, so you can check it out there.
Okay. You can get me over on The Boy Toner on Twitter, or TerryToner22 on Instagram, where I'm mostly plugging my radio stuff for 8radio.com. Andy, you can get him
at Andy Cantwell on everywhere except TikTok, which has been banned, so I'm Andy Cantwell 2, and where you'll find funny sketches and stuff.
And before we go, because we're episode 7 of the series now, we haven't thanked him once, the wonderful Neil Murray does our music for our theme song and our Patreon song. He's our musical maestro man. He helped us out with our live show as well. Neil is,
boy did he,
a gem. Go follow him, Neil Murray Music on YouTube. I think it's Instagram as well. But he is brilliant. Otherwise, we will see us next week for Phantom Thread with a very special guest. Again, I'm not going to mention him, just in case. Mm-hmm. Just in case we don't disappoint you guys.
So yeah,
it's Daniel Day-Lewis, isn't it? She wake you up to tell you that it was only a change of plan. Dream up, let me fill your cup with the promise of a man. Did I see change of
promise of a man.